Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It is an understatement to claim the U.S.-Israel war on Iran is a blunder. This war of choice has already made itself felt economically, politically, and in the process, flipping the geopolitical chessboard. Everything is changing. There's no return to the status quo ante. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Mark here in Moscow. The war continues. We have this very odd, ambiguous, and I think deceptive speech from the president last week on the status of the war against Iran. It seems all but inevitable that there's going to be some kind of use of troops introduced to this conflict. The evidence is piling up. Why would you be assembling all these forces? Towards what end? Well, it's very unclear. We can only speculate. But Mark, in the broader scheme of things, as I said in my introduction, is the global chessboard being flipped? Are we seeing a major evolution of the political system? Yesterday, I was looking at some dates or thinking about them. 1914, 1945, 1991. Can we put 2026 along aside those numbers, those dates, Mark?
Very possibly. That might definitely lie in the cards for the end game here. Trump's speech was, I think there was an expectation within the Western mainstream media, certainly within the markets, that Trump would signal some type of de-escalation, that he would be stepping away from the conflict. And when he didn't, the markets responded predictably and, either went up when we're talking the price of oil or things, or when we're talking the stock market, you know, lost a half a billion, in value, plummeting down. Instead, what we got from Trump is the same type of insane, megalomaniacal social media ranting, kind of a rehashing of the last several weeks, at the same time claiming that the U.S. has won the greatest victory for the 25th time in the past few weeks, and Iran is totally obliterated and incapable of striking back. But also, we're going to be hitting them for a while bit longer, and we're going to bomb them into the Stone Age where they belong. And I mean, we just have to address that. That is genocidal rhetoric.
Yes, it is.
A racist genocidal rhetoric of the very worst kind. And indeed, while Politico has told us over the last week that the U.S. is running out of military targets because Iran has everything buried underground in 36 or so fortress missile cities beneath mountains of granite, and are still able to launch drones and missiles with actual increasing frequency rather than decreasing. So the U.S. has turned to hitting schools and universities, particularly science and technology. They've been hitting pharmaceutical companies. And now Trump was gloating over bridges being destroyed in Iran. That is not actually a sign of victory.
Yeah,
that is a sign of spite.
Yeah, and it's a sign of desperation, George, because none of the goals, whatever you can name the day of the week, the goal of the day, but none of them have been achieved here. This wanton slaughter of civilian infrastructure and civilians is not getting him any closer to any goal, whatever goal you want to pick. This seems like desperation, or maybe in lieu of a strategy, they're still trying to come up with something, because you know, we don't have to open the Strait of Hormuz. Let others do it. Let them cherish it, whatever that means. George, so is a policy still being thought out in lieu of the lack of results to this point in time?
I don't know whether it's actually being thought out. I think Trump is just floundering around hoping that something will come up, you know, the magical Dulce Rodriguez will emerge in Iran and will let him claim some form of victory. But the issue of the Strait of Hormuz is very interesting, because during his nationwide address, he said, well, we don't really care. We don't need the Strait of Hormuz. We don't really use it, so we don't. It's up to others. He didn't specify. It's up to others to go in and take it, presumably take the oil. But then a few days later, he sent out the truth in which he once again threatened Iran with, you know, fire and brimstone if they don't open the Strait of Hormuz within 48 hours. So that's supposedly will run out, you know, early in the week. So we're still in the same situation. So what does he hope? What is he hoping to achieve? Now, Bibi Netanyahu seems to have thrown him a lifeline by making a declaration that Israel is no longer facing an existential threat from Iran. This is the first time Netanyahu has ever said anything like that. That's, you know, 30, 40 years or whatever since he's been making statements. But this is the first time he said Israel no longer faces an existential threat from Iran because we have so degraded Iran's capabilities that we're no longer under threat. That seems like a lifeline to Trump, but I don't think it's going to work for him because he's still got the Strait of Hormuz problem. Because the situation now for the United States is worse than it was on February the 27th. On February the 27th, Iran was not in control of the Strait of Hormuz. It is now. So Trump can't just walk away and say, well, we've accomplished our goals, if you're obviously in a worse situation than you were before the start of the campaign.
You know, Mark, we're only beginning to see now the impact of this war of choice. I mean, if you look at the economies all through, particularly in Asia, I mean, long lines for petrol. We're seeing the lack of fertilizer getting to the global south. I mean, this is going to start impacting in a very, very serious way very quickly. That's not being talked about by the president of the United States, but that's what most of the world is worried about at this point.
Yeah, you're right. We're just really seeing the beginnings of it now because oil tankers and oil product tankers and the like that had departed from the Strait of Hormuz were still making their way at, you know, tanker speed around the world for the last month or so. Well, the last of those has now docked. And now the bite will really start to come in. And we're starting already to see because of shortages of jet fuel around the world, flights being canceled all over the world, and price, including in the United States, and prices going up 20 to 50% on airline tickets as a result of that. There's already energy rationing going on, particularly in Southeast Asia, which is the hardest hit so far. At the same time, Bloomberg tells us that Europe is about to get hit next. And already in France, they're talking about running a wartime economy that has nothing to do with war, simply dealing with the consequences of the U.S. and Israel's illegal, unprovoked war of aggression on Iran and Iran's nuclear option of, well, not closing, but selectively closing the Strait of Hormuz to Western
I call it gating.
Traffic sits.
I call it gating.
Yeah, toll boothing. They're collecting a toll.
But George, you know, the seriousness is being underestimated because if we go to the oil shock of 1973, for example, that was the lack of supply getting to the market, okay, because of the boycott. But now we're seeing infrastructure being destroyed. So if this all ended today, you know, it's not going to return to normal anytime soon. I wouldn't even want to put a timeline on it because you're looking at infrastructure that could take years, maybe a decade to replace. So, I mean, this is just not a supply problem. It's the destruction of the entire energy global economy here. That is the impact of that is actually quite hard to comprehend, George.
Yes, it is. And that's why Trump's bluster that he's going to rain fire and brimstone on Iran if it doesn't open the Strait of Hormuz is so empty because it's clear that the United States has not destroyed Iran's capability. So if he does indeed start attacking Iran's power generators, then we know that is exactly what Iran will do. Iran always reciprocates. So if you attack our power generators, we will attack your power generators. So this will be throughout the Persian Gulf. And that's a huge, huge international problem. That is why, you know, as we look at this, what is Trump's next move? Then you have to think, well, it's going to be a ground invasion, because there doesn't seem to be any other options for him. Iran isn't going to let him off the hook. You know, you started this, you're now going to pay the price for it. So then talking about a ground invasion, that's a huge, serious issue. I don't think United States has thought this through. I don't think they have the resources, even within the to be able to do something like that.
I mean, how long did the planning of the landing on Normandy? That took 2 years or something like that. I mean, it was a huge mark.
Yeah, and the whole economic situation could actually get much worse, Peter. Because the axis of resistance has fully entered the chat. There's very intense fighting between Israel and Hezbollah going on in southern Lebanon right now. And the Houthis have entered the chat, the Ansar Allah movement. And they have made clear that once again, they have the potential and could close off the Bab el-Mandab Straits through the Red Sea. And if you think we're in an energy and shipping crisis now, wait till that. Now, I suspect Iran is telling the Houthis to hold off. They're saving that as a response step on an escalatory ladder. And if the U.S. indeed attempts some type of a suicide squad invasion of islands or the coast in Iran, or targets Iran's energy infrastructure in a big way, I think that's a card they'll pull out. And that then, well, all economic hell is going to break loose. But I do believe Trump when he says that hell is going to start to rain, spelled wrong, down on Iran. But that hell is the pieces of U.S. aircraft that we've seen in the last few days falling down in Iran, because Iran's air defense is still kicking. And if anything, now that the U.S., having run out of standoff munitions, is moving into Iranian airspace, risky, they're putting themselves right into the targets of Iran's sophisticated passive infrared air defense detection systems and launchers.
Yeah, as we all three of us suspected, Trump's reaction to all this is to continue to double down without getting any of the results. We're far off. The status quo ante, which will never be returned to, but February 27th is looking pretty sweet right now in comparison. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news, and that real news, George, to shift gears, is the trials and tribulations of NATO. My goodness, my Twitter X account is just on fire all the time, and it's not really about Iran. It's about NATO. Very interesting. Give us the lay of the land, and I'm sure we don't have any crocodile tears here. George.
No, we definitely don't have any crocodile tears. So Trump's idea of NATO is that, well, since we've got this military alliance, everybody has to get on board any war that the United States launches, whether they think it's a good idea or not, whether they were involved in the planning or not, whether they were even told in advance that anything was going to happen or not, they have to get on board. Now, the Europeans, although they are not very enthusiastic about this war, they are very enthusiastic about the war in Ukraine. So they're just angry and frustrated with Trump as to why you're getting bogged down in the Middle East when you should be focusing on Ukraine. And they're very annoyed about this. But now we have, you know, Emmanuel Macron saying, but we basically don't have the capability of opening the Strait of Hormuz. We're not going to do it. And we had that new coalition of the willing chaired by UK Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper, basically saying, well, we're going to explore all kinds of diplomatic...
No, I decided to have meetings, George.
Yeah, exactly. But she firmly ruled out any military option to open the Strait of Hormuz. So now Trump says, well, okay, you're not interested in Iran. I'm not really very interested in Ukraine. And so we had to have Mark Rutte, the NATO Secretary General, getting on to on the phone to all of the NATO leaders that you've got to keep Trump happy. You have to somehow make sure that he doesn't get pissed off. So that's why they went in for this whole thing of, yeah, we got to do something about the Strait of Hormuz. Not sure what, but we got to do something about it. But fundamentally, Macron, who was only a few months ago saying, well, we're going to send our troops into Ukraine. I mean, we're ready to fight Russia. But apparently now he doesn't have the resources to do anything about the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, it's a cottage industry, Mark, all through our lives, the crisis of NATO. We've been around this many, many, many times. Is this time different?
No. I mean, yes, but no.
Yes, but
George made out a very good point, right? That what we're seeing is not some geopolitical ideological movement away from the pursuit of US-led Western global hegemony. Instead, it is a crisis between the US and Europe on prioritization. For Europe, that priority is Ukraine. For the Trump administration in the United States, that priority now, anyway, is Iran, never mind what his national security strategy and national defense strategy said a few months ago. That is the crucial right now. Trump has threatened once again to walk away from NATO. The Russian former president, prime minister, still deputy chair of the Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, made a very lengthy, sarcastic post about this, and he skewered the issue. This is more Mars talking past Venus differences between Europe and the United States right now. It's extremely unlikely that Trump will or will be allowed to or has the power as the president of the United States to walk away from NATO. What is essentially happening right now is he's throwing a tantrum. He's throwing a petulant little
tantrum. Well, there's a lot of tantrums out there.
There's a lot of. And the Europeans are simply aghast that what they see as the priority being now completely shoved to the side by Trump. But ultimately, I believe they will simply wait Trump out. He's almost certainly going to suffer in the midterm elections coming up, and his power, such as it is, will be past its apogee, and they'll be looking for a next president who will return the U.S. to proper hegemonic form as they see it.
I'm not convinced that Trump is going to survive this. Okay, I'm not convinced that he will complete his term. For the reasons that we said in the first part of the program. If you think things are getting bad now, there's going to be a cascade effect that like I said, I think it's very hard to comprehend.
Is President Vance any better though?
I'm not going to disagree with you on that. George, there's a lot of people are saying, and it's kind of interesting to me, I'm not going to buy into it completely. This is a catastrophe for U.S. prestige and its attempts to maintain some form of hegemony. But the U.S. is going to be all right, okay? It doesn't really need the Middle East. I think if we go back to some of the murmurings coming out of this administration at the beginning of last year is Fortress America, a greater America. I mean, I'm convinced, or maybe I'm alone in this, but this whole thing about Canada and Greenland, it's not over yet with this administration here. Instead of a pivot to Asia, there's going to be a pivot to the Western Hemisphere. And I think that the catastrophe that is being presented to the United States and the and Europe more generally, there's going to be this, well, we still have the Western Hemisphere. Venezuela is what they like. Iran, no. Go ahead, George.
I think that's right, Peter. There is, though, the caveat that the United States has been the pivot of the kind of international economic and financial order, that it's the found of stability. You know, the dollar is the global reserve currency. You know, you had the idea that the United States maintains, you know, freedom of navigation, you know, the you know, free trading in goods and so on. So, I mean, that was always a little bit superficial, but nonetheless, I think everybody adhered to that idea that the United States is the kind of the anchor of kind of global stability. What Trump has now shown is that the United States is the exact opposite of all of that, that for no obvious reason, the United States has just shattered the any semblance of stability in the Middle East. And that has had all sorts of knock-on effects throughout the rest of the world. And so even countries that, you know, resent the United States hegemon, let's say China, China's not particularly happy about kind of global economic instability. China is an export-driven economy. And if the world collapses into a massive recession, that is going to hurt China. So yes, the United States is still overwhelmingly the dominant economic power, but its reputation as the kind of the anchor of global economic and financial stability, that reputation has been very severely damaged.
Well, I would counter is that the United States is the primary exporter of instability in the world. Okay, what I'm just saying is that, and I'll throw it to Mark right now. Is there a rebalancing going on right now? I mean, if this paradigm of, you know, Western Hemisphere, Greater America, and all that, then it's another reason to believe that this whole war was against Iran was for Israel. Because if the plan is a greater hemispheric presence, what does this have to do with Iran? And why did they go to war against Iran for Israel? And if this paradigm shift plays out as I've described, it's not too good for Israel. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so apparently what dominated the thinking in the Trump administration was that they wanted to pivot away from the Middle East, but they had that pesky Iran problem that Israel kept complaining about. So they would escalate real quickly, take care of Iran,
right,
and then pivot to China, which is a parallel of the Blinken and Sullivan administration, which wanted to quickly take care of Russia and then pivot to China. And both of them have ended geopolitically, catastrophically for the United States. There are multiple magnitudes of orders, knock-on effects on U.S.-led Western hegemony that are resulting from this critical imperial overreach by the United States. First, militarily, the U.S. has burned through its stockpiles of air defense interceptors, of standoff munitions like the Tomahawks and the JASSMs. Not only can it not complete the bombing Iran back into the Stone Age, not can it no longer help Ukraine at all, even if it wanted to, but this is going to be a hard geopolitical limit on U.S. options confronting Russia, China, or even other regional powers in the next decade to come. If China wanted to take Taiwan militarily next week, they could, and now there's very little the U.S. could do conventionally to stop it. Thankfully, I guess, for the separatists in Taiwan, at least, that is not something that they want to do. But there are economic consequences as well. It's hard to see the Strait of Hormuz now going back to the way it was. It's almost certainly going to end up under Iranian, not Trump. Trump last week was fantasizing about him and the Ayatollah running the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has made clear it's going to be run by them and Oman. And that is going to have effects on global energy and shipping. But also the petrodollar. Because now increasingly oil trade is going to be pivoting away from exclusive use with the dollar towards the yuan, potentially towards other currencies and barter systems. This is going to be a further degradation of U.S. power. And also, I don't expect the U.S. to withdraw from the Middle East. That is not going to happen. But no matter what, their presence there is going to be extremely limited compared to what it was, because Iran has demonstrated the ability to reach out and just destroy U.S. military bases across the Middle East with its long-range strikes, and that the U.S. is simply inadequate air and missile defense systems can't cope with it. Hard geopolitical limit.
Yeah, George, I mean, there's finally, I suppose, in the United States, the result of this blunderous war, is that they've recognized the limits of their own power. We've been all talking about this for a very long time, multipolar world. And this is evidence of it. Go ahead, yeah, 30 seconds before we wrap up.
Well, in a way, that's the case. But we've been here many times before. I mean, after Vietnam, there was exactly the same kind of talk. Well, the United States has realized the limits of its own power. Things are going to be different. We're going to take into consideration other countries' interests. And then within a few years, all that had disappeared. Same thing happened after the George W. Bush's war on Iraq. Oh, well, now America's realized the limits of its power. We have a new president, full of respect for other countries.
Okay, Middle East. Okay, George, I'm sorry.
What happened now.
They're just telling me that it's just incapable of learning from failure. That's what it sounds like to me. All right, I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.